My very special guests are Alan Abadesa Green and Alex Robinson. Websites are thesyncbook.com, that's sync with a Y, and also toolonginthisplace.wordpress.com is Alex's contributions. And also, Alan, I wanted to inquire, because this is something you were saying over the break here, is that you've done the Sync Book 2 with a whole raft of new authors, and I think that really kind of embodies the spirit of exploration and really getting a whole feel and of different perspectives around the world when you get on people, even those that you don't really agree with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, like, I'm trying not to obviously focus on that, you know, but my thing is it's just it's important for me to see, is there something I've missed? Can you, you know, it's almost like allowing someone to give that argument, not just because maybe you'll convince me differently, but maybe that answer is right for someone else. Like, I'm a firm believer in that there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer or philosophy or anything for humanity. You know, there are, we are individuals. We're individuals for a reason. And even though, obviously, the study of synchronicity takes you into subjects of, like, collective consciousness and things like that, I'm still very much a believer in individuality and that we can explore this collective consciousness, but then we always bring it back to our individual consciousness, and that's how we process it and maybe apply it differently. So, yeah, that sort of thing where it's like, all right, that, you know, this one person's perspective might not really speak to me. But again, two things. I might actually learn something from it. I might be convinced differently. Or maybe there's someone else out there who that is the right answer for. That's the information they're needing to hear at this moment. So, absolutely. I feel like this is, and it's the only way to really feel honest about these sorts of things is to say, I don't know. And even though I think I disagree with that guy, well, maybe he's right. So, you know, it needs fair space on the table.
Yes, my three favorite words, Alan. I don't know. My three most hated words are, I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the point of being alive if you don't care?
So, it's interesting. You know, this whole process of doing these books has been just a really fascinating exploration for me. And it's been, again, bouncing back and forth on things to say, I think I know enough that I feel comfortable coming out and trying to speak to people about it and introducing a topic, but also at the same time remaining hopefully humble enough to say, but I don't know all the answers, and this is not something I could have done by myself. I need 52 other people to offer something else that I can't offer. You know, to give their perspectives, to give their information that maybe I haven't researched that angle or things like that. I tried doing James Corbett's show. He asked me something about, I used the phrase like quantum entanglement. And he was like, do you really mean that? And I was like, yeah, I mean that. And he's like, well, he's like, that's not scientifically accurate. I'm like, I'm an artist. I probably shouldn't be speaking of quantum physics, but we have Anthony Peake in the book. We have Dr. Kirby Surprise in the book, who I think they know what they're talking about. And it's hard for me maybe to try and bring their information out in a few minutes segment on a radio show. But at the same time, this is why I need someone else who knows the science behind it. I need someone else who, you know, takes a different perspective, someone who comes at it from the conspiracy angle, someone who comes at it from the New Age angle. All these different things I feel like are really important, so you make sure that nothing gets missed. If you don't, you know, uncover every stone, you're bound to miss something. And these are people, everyone kind of bring their strengths to it.
Yeah. I see it very similar to be a scientific research, as kind of similar to Transformers in a way. There's this giant Transformer called Devastator, who's comprised of about like six or seven who all join together. You know, four of them become a leg or an arm, and one becomes a head, and one becomes the body, and so on and so forth. Without it, all you've got is smaller, insignificant things that can't really make a difference. But all combined together, you have this almighty machine that is capable of conquering and destroying and what have you. And I think this is similar in terms of research projects and things of that nature. People all bring their different elements, and without all those different elements, you don't have a complete machine.
Yeah, this is why there's this, we get into some tricky territory. There are people who say, like, oh, collectivism is bad. Well, that's probably true. You know, this idea of a one world government. I don't support a one world. I don't support any government. I'm an anarchist. I don't want a local government, let alone a one world government. But this idea that we are one world, I do think we should support that idea, that I can speak to you guys who are both in New Zealand, and we can share information across national boundaries and geographic boundaries. I think that's something very much that we should appreciate. This idea that collectivism, if it means coming together and pooling our resources and our information, that we can compare notes and yet still leave room for disagreements and all that sort of stuff, that's great. Collectivism where it's some sort of, you know, brain dead hive mind that everyone's chanting the same, you know, five words over and over, or no one's allowed to think differently. No, of course I don't support that. So like, we get some tricky territories, but it's to say that, you know, these things are really important. I think people coming together is hugely, hugely important, and particularly whether it be across country lines and ideological lines as well.
Yeah, it works on the small scale, I think. Like a band, for example, you know, somebody's doing the drums, two people are doing guitars and one person's lead singer or something like that. Is that collectivism or is that teamwork? And what's the difference? Where do you draw the line?
That's a damn good question. I don't know. Wait, Brett, where do you draw the line? I think if it's someone says, if the guitar player says to the drummer, hey, you have to play my song, that's why bands always get into fights, right?
So, well, that's what we have emotions for.
What's that?
That's what we have our emotions for. You know, that's what they're supposed to be telling us. It feels good. So, you know, it feels good, then it's probably going to be good. And if it doesn't feel good, a lot of the time too, our emotions are so twisted and mixed up. We don't really know what we feel, and a lot of time, now we're not even allowed to feel. There's so many things we're not allowed to feel, which means there's so many emotions we're not able to get in touch with. You know, what's his name? Antonio Damasio has just pointed out the importance of emotion in survival. It is so significant in human survival, and yet in so many ways we can't use our emotion. You're not allowed to have this emotion. You're not allowed to show that. You have to keep your straight face, keep a smile on. So we're not actually able to access the emotions we need that will tell us whether something is good for us or not good for us, whether it's working. You know, we live in such a restricted, armored way. This armor that people have around themselves so much, I think, is armoring against emotion, against feeling.
I think it's more like an Iron Maiden, where you think you're surrounded by armor, but you've actually get punctured by all the spikes that you've created for yourself.
Well said.
Yeah. But either way, you're not having forward momentum. You are killing yourself slowly.
Why is that? Are we all suckers for punishment here, do you think, Alex?
I would come back to that this is a trauma-based society, and we really need to understand that on every level it's trauma-based. And we have to be kind to ourselves and understand that this is what we're coming from. We're not coming from a healthy background or a healthy ancestry. We are coming upon layer of trauma that's just building and building. I think part of the reasons why we have World War One and World War Two. That it could happen. That World War Two could possibly happen after World War One. You know, that people didn't say no. It points to this massive. The trauma-based mind control is the Western world. It's not individual people. It's not, you know, little actors in Hollywood or something. It's the entire Western culture. Mm. And we're not having access to our emotions. Part of just, if you can feel emotion, it can start to break down. It's like food. It's like we can't digest. We can't digest. We've got all this undigested stuff inside of us. If you can't digest your food, you're going to be very sick. You're going to starve. We're not digesting emotion. We're not having access to it. We don't even know which emotion is which. And emotion is the very crux of our survival. There was that Candace Pert, who believed that emotion is the link between matter and spirit, the spiritual world and matter. It's emotion.
Alex, man, your point is incredibly well taken. I do get exactly what you're saying, and I think I agree with you for the most part, but can I ask, is there a fine line between understanding that we, all our emotions and everything in our culture is based on trauma, but without falling into a victim mentality?
Oh, we don't need to fall into a victim mentality at all. I just, I mean, this is my research, my study, and using myself as well to say that you can be very strong, you know? It's looking clearly at reality. This is the one thing. Most of the truth movement does not look at reality. They look at what they want to see. I'm saying we need to look at reality, and the reality, as clear as I can get, the proto-truth that I'm working on at the moment, is that the West is very much trauma-based mind control, that we come from, we are living within this trauma society. And so we need to just take the blinkers off and look and say, well, yeah, you know, instead of going, oh, look at these people, they won't wake up, they won't. We're all part of this. We're looking a bit more. We're looking at reality a bit more. But we can't possibly think that we know it, that we've got it, that we can see. You know, when I, again, use my own life, I am my own lab rat. So it's just a constant looking back and looking back and looking at what's reality here. What am I not wanting to face? What am I afraid of? You know, and just turning and going back into that thing, because I need to see reality so that I can deal with it. So that I can change the world.
This reminds me of something my producer was telling me just before he left New Zealand. He said that, you know, I believe that there's a whole bunch of people out there who will just never wake up, you know, like it's too late, it's all decided, you know, it's predestined. And I said to him, did you at some point wake up, or were you always awake? And he's like, no, I wasn't always awake. I woke up in 1997. And I said, well, okay, what's the cutoff date here, you know? Is it only past 1997 that people could wake up? Is it only, you know? It's not based on reality, bro. You know, you're not feeling happy because these particular situations and the government screwing you over and whatever, but that's not anything to do with reality, okay? That's just something that's happening to you, and you're taking what's applying to you and then trying to apply it and make it stick to everybody else so that you can have some kind of certainty, some kind of comfort with things being bad, because at least I know for a fact that they are, when it wasn't a fact at all, and you're just doing it to make yourself feel comfortable. And we do this all the time, always ragging on everybody else because, hey, they haven't gotten as far as I have. Like, have you ever seen, like, somebody who's a wealthy, rich businessman or something like that, and he's always giving everybody else hell and telling them to get off their ass and that kind of thing, and so they can be more like me. I don't think anybody should be like anybody else. Why can't we all just figure things out for ourselves and stop being comfortable with being in with being unhappy with ourselves and unhappy with the world and unhappy with everybody else? It's so ironic. In order to be comfortable, we have to make ourselves feel happy with discomforting things.
That's right. That is liking things that we dislike. So we are lying to ourselves constantly. We are not accepting, I dislike this thing. This is wrong for me. So many people, you think, how many people go to work every week on a Monday? They loathe their job. They force themselves to like it in some way. You know, they feel like, what happens if they are honest? You know, what happens? Because you're going to have to take some big steps. If you are honest, you really are going to have to take some big steps. It's just how it is. You know, the amount of people who are dying slowly through the work that they do. If you see it, if you acknowledge it, you have to take some big steps. You know, you have to face, and it hurts, but it's important.
I have a physical example of this. Here in New Zealand, we have a safety course called SightSafe. And it's just basically like 100 questions. You know, they mark you 1 out of 100, and you have to get above 90 in order to pass the course and get your little SightSafe pass card, right? Before that, New Zealand in the Western world had the highest percentage of deaths and accidents on work sites, building and construction and so forth. Because we had a mentality that was consistent of three words. She'll be right. you know? And the government was looking at this and going, oh, my God, we've got 20,000 injuries last year and we're only a country of about 3 million people on major work sites. This is really dangerous. We have to implement something. And they went from 20,000 injuries and I think quite a lot of deaths as well, hundreds of, if not 1,000 or so, to virtually nothing inside of 6 months of introducing these new safety protocols, which are very simple things. And I believe that that's right, exactly what we're talking about here, is if you simply identify just these tiny little things that might be a little bit dangerous, you know, perhaps a sparking wire, perhaps you're not properly secured or fastened to a ladder or whatever, it might be a bit dangerous and you might want to take a little bit of extra care. But people have been encouraged to not care. We'll be right back.